Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get emotion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Jay Gruden on the Rude Guest Hotline. Coach, what's up? Good to talk to you again. How are you?
It's good to be here, Grant and Danny. How you guys doing?
Good, buddy.
We are chilling. No Jaden Daniels, no problem for the offense. They dominate the Raiders. Marcus Mariota was great. I feel like Cliff Kingsbury was in his bag and had a hell of a day. They come out with an extra tackle as a tight end because they're without John Bates. They run the ball right at the Raiders, who had stopped the run for a couple weeks. What'd you make of their offensive plan and Kingsbury's play calling without Daniels?
I thought it was great. We mentioned it last week. They got to make sure they get an extra tackle in there to help out in the running game, and they did that. And Trent Scott, man, I think he might deserve a game ball. He did an outstanding job at the point of attack. They helped, obviously, the right tackle, Connerly, quite a bit. He was only one-on-one on the Crosby only a few times. So they did a great job. They moved the people around, the fronts around. They mixed it to run, the pass, the zone reads. Quarterback design runs, kept the Raiders on their heels, and Marcus was outstanding.
Crosby made an impact because he's great. It's what he does. He you know, he bothers you, disrupts things, and you know, whether it's wrong holding penalty, got a sack, a couple tackles for loss, etc. But just in general, how do you think they did trying to negate him?
Oh, they did great. You know, the sack he got was it was a tough protection. He tried to pull the guard and try to get out to Crosby, which is never a good protection. He just beat the guard over there. To the quarterback. But overall, I thought it was outstanding. Like I said, you know, the thing I like most about this team is, you know, everybody participates. If you dress, you're going to play. You know, Chris Moore had a catch. McLaurin, Bebo did some good things. All the linemen participated. Trent Scott, I thought Chris Paul had a great game at left guard, filling in for Brandon Coleman. You know, Zach Ertz made some plays, and obviously McNichols comes in and has a big run. Rodriguez had 11 carries, and Merritt, you know, Crosby Merritt did a good job. So they all participated. They all did their part. And it was a great team win for that offense. And then defensively, same thing. I mean, these guys all play hard.
Jay, what do you make of the fact that Mariota's now played three times dating back to last year? He played four quarters, missed the first drive against the Panthers, and they scored 40. He comes in week 18, game 17 against Dallas, leads them back to a win, was 15 of 18, was great. And then yesterday they score 40 again. I mean, he's been so good for them. Not thought of as a starter, though, but he's clearly a fit in this offense.
Oh, for sure. Now, they had a lot of help. They had a punt return for touchdown, a kickoff return to the 10, and a run up the middle that, you know, the guy broke four tackles and scored a touchdown from 60 yards out. But, yeah, he's an outstanding player. He's a first-round pick. The only thing that's hurt Marcus is injury history. That's it. I mean, he's been productive at other places. My brother loved him. He had a for some time out there and loved him. And he's been a good quarterback. He just hasn't been able to stay on the field when he's had that long-term opportunity.
Jay Gruden with us here on Grant and Danny. So to that performance, I think there was three or four drops in the game. There's a throw. So pretty much he's, you know, 19 for 21 in terms of throwing, how accurate he was, et cetera. Could have been a much more productive day for a day that was already pretty damn good. Did you see any differences, anything that they were kind of scheming up differently just to make sure that he was comfortable, or did it just look like the normal game plan to you?
It looked like a normal game plan, other than, you know, with Bates out, they brought in the extra tackle,
brought
in some big people a lot more than often. But, yeah, they did a great job of keeping them in the pocket, and they weren't in very many tough situations. And when they were, They were very conservative in their play calls. You know, if they had third and 12, they're probably going to call screen or something like that. But first down, second down, if they threw it, they had guys open, and Marcus made the right call. And, you know, they blew a coverage. Jeremy Chinn blew a coverage for the Raiders, and obviously McCaffrey got the easy touchdown. So, yeah, I think it was a great game plan. They kept the Raiders off balance with the run pass and play pass and his own reads. And that's what Cliff's been doing all season, or all, you know, since he's been here with Jaden. So it didn't change with Marcus.
What did you make? You talked about the contributions by committee all over the offense, but specifically in the backfield, Rodriguez goes from inactive to the first guy on the field, and he's the only guy that touches the ball for a couple drives. I mean, for whatever reason, Kroski Merritt, they're making him earn everything as a rookie. You know, he eventually gets in there and gets some carries, but it was McNichols who hits the home run from 60. You know, it feels like every week we're expecting, like, oh, Bill's going to carry the mail. He's going to get 20 carries, and it hasn't happened yet, but everybody's been involved. What do you think of how they're doing it?
I think that's a smart way to do it. You know, I think he keeps these guys fresh, keeps them into the game. When their number's called, they have to produce. They have to feel like, hey, if I get an opportunity, I better make the most of this sucker. Otherwise, I'm not going to get another one. So it kind of puts a sense of urgency on their little asses, and they got to go out and perform, whether it's in pass protection or the running game or ball security, punt team, whatever it might be. These guys are all performing. You know, none of them are going to be Pro Bowlers, but they all are very much have a hand in what goes on in this offense week in and week out.
Just sort of thinking of that with the kind of that three-headed monster, so to speak, is that something that you feel like is just nothing but hot hand, or is it matchup dependent, or is it, you know, it vary by you know, player package, et cetera? Like, how do you think it's getting decided, and how would you decide it?
Well, I think Rodriguez is a little bit of a bigger back, more between the tackles. So when they bring in the big people, I think it naturally fits Rodriguez to be in there. And if you're going to spread them out, I think it's more for Kroski Merritt. He's got more juice, probably more elusiveness, and probably a little bit better in a pass game. And I think McNichols has probably the most experience on the third down role, pass protecting and doing some things of that nature. So they all have their own separate roles. I think if you're trying to pound people, it's Rodriguez. You're trying to spread people out, it's Kroski Merritt. And if you're trying to get a third down play, it's probably Jerry McNichols.
Jay Gruden with us on the Rood guest hotline. Rood, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Live on Grant and Danny after a 41-24 home win. The Commanders are 2-1. Jay, Dan Quinn took a big shot on the sideline. Everyone was talking about how his face was bloody and he was still at the podium, had the dried blood on the beard or whatever, but he hit his head really hard. It looked like kind of like when Tua has slammed the back of his head and goes into like the fencing posture. Have you ever taken a huge shot on the sideline that you can remember?
I have not, fortunately. I was very well aware of what people were doing, how close they were. I was trying at all costs to get the hell out of the way, but sometimes you can't because people are around you. But yeah, no, I avoided that stuff, man. My knees are bad. My shoulders are bad. I had too many concussions when I played. There ain't no way I was getting hit. I don't care. I could see it coming a mile away. The only time I almost got hit was on punt. You know, those flyers run out of bounds because you don't see them. You're watching the punt, and all of a sudden there's a flyer coming right at your face. Those are the ones that scare you.
We talked about this before when sometimes, you know, guys like McLaurin who'd started off kind of slow over the course of a season weren't getting targeted a ton. And if the offense is humming, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, you put up 30, 40 points, who cares who's getting the looks? But if the offense is kind of sluggish, et cetera, how would you kind of handle this receiver room? Talking about the same way that we were doing just now with running backs in terms of getting guys looks to try to get them going. Again, no complaints. You put up 40-plus points. Something's going right. But just in terms of getting guys into their rhythm and getting their sea legs underneath them, et cetera, is it something where you'd go, okay, it's just a feel? Is it a coverage look? Or is it, let me try to get Terry going, et cetera? How would you handle it?
Yeah, it has to be a feel and a coverage look. I think the quarterbacks, Jaden and Marcus, do a good job of taking what the defense gives them. And we're not going to force feed anybody because of that's who you are. We'll get you the ball if that's what the coverage dictates. And that's what great quarterbacks do. They spread it out. And then when time comes, if it's a man-to-man look, you work your best matchup, or there's Debo outside against a corner, inside against a nickel or whatever it might be, or Terry on the outside against a corner. So that's going to be up to the quarterbacks to make that decision. It's up to the receivers to get open and find those holes and zones, and then obviously win in man coverage. And for the most part, they've been doing that. You know, I think there's still some room for improvement from the receiver room, and I think they'll get it as time goes on when Jaden gets back and rolling.
Would you be bringing in competition for Matt Gay? Missed his first kick yesterday from 37, was 1-for-4 on the season at that point. Ended up hitting from 46 and 56, but also kicked the ball out of bounds to give the Raiders some momentum.
Yeah, I met Matt on the golf course over at Creighton Farms about a month ago, and they had winter training camp, and he was playing golf. You guys said I had it easy on my player. Let's club Club J. I saw him on the golf course during training camp. I'm like, what the hell? But he's a hell of a nice guy. But yeah, I think that's something that got to be in your back of your mind. But he did make a big kick. You know, you give him a couple more weeks, see how it goes. But I think he's a good, solid veteran kicker to have. I just don't know who you're going to get off the streets right now. I'm sure there are some people that are available. But right now, I'd give him another week or two because he's got the experience.
They did also pay him a record amount of money for a one-year veteran deal. I think he got like $4 million, which is guaranteed up front or whatever. So if you move on from him, you're paying him a bunch of money.
Yeah, when you get later in the season, you're playing and you got game-winning field goals. I wouldn't blink having Matt Kay kick a field goal for me right now. I know he missed one. You know, just got to get used to the turf over there on that field, and he'll be fine.
Jay, on the other side of the ball, Washington's defense really good in some areas, you know, maybe left wanting in others. What'd you make of that side?
I thought they played their ass off. I really do. They played hard. And Jesse had a couple big hits. You know, he only had 60 yards rushing. I couldn't believe he didn't get him out of 2-point play, though. That was disappointing. And then the fourth and one they gave to some guy, some white guy I never heard of, which was disappointing as well. But I thought they flew around good. Bobby Wagner was everywhere. Luvu was everywhere. I think those guys did great. Vaughn got his sack. Jean Baptiste got a sack. I never even heard of him. I think Payne was disruptive. He had a quarterback hurry and tackle for loss. And I think these guys play hard. I think Dorrance Armstrong played very well at defensive end. And Will Harris made some plays. And Lattimore was tight on some coverages. And, you know, Sanistro got beat on a tough quarters beater that a lot of people run versus quarters. And he got beat. He took the brunt of the criticism there. But for the most part, I like the way their defense played.
Dylan Laub or Luby or something?
LaBey.
L-A-U-B-E. Yeah, yeah.
Fourth and one, Dylan Luby up the tackle, off tackle, no gain.
Yeah, give it to that guy as many times as you want.
Here we go. The pronunciation, L-O in caps, so that's got to be low, right?
Low.
So Luby, Dylan Luby.
Yeah, Dylan Luby. Hey, Ashton, you stand over here next to me on fourth and one. We're going to give it to Dylan Luby. What the?
So you weren't impressed by Dylan Luby, it doesn't sound like, Jay.
No, not when I got Ashton Jitsi, a first-round pick standing next to me. I think I'd try to get him in there to run the 3 yards.
That makes some sense.
Yeah, two more yards than we did in the game.
Who was your best old player that you coached in terms of age? I ask this because Bobby Wagner at 35 yesterday was incredible. 11 tackles, 2 sacks, had a couple of other pressures, some TFLs, kind of took over defensively. What does it take at 35 to be that good in this league?
I don't know. He's really good. And him and Luvu together, they're a great combination because when they have a blitz package going, they can read the turn of the center. If they turn to Frankie, then Wagner comes, hits it right up the gut and blows up the running back, and it's vice versa. Luvu does the same thing. So they got a really good combination. They're two physical linebackers. Usually you have maybe one physical linebacker, one's a sideline-to-sideline cover guy, but both those guys are very physical. You know, I just hope that they don't get exposed in pass coverage. But for the most part, they're very good. As far as the oldest guy I've ever coached, Donald Penn was 38 when he replaced Trent Williams. Pretty good for us, although we had to chip him every time. But he got a lot of mileage out of his career, that's for sure.
Yeah, you coached London late, too. I mean, he was such a
good
player.
London. I never had London. Oh, I thought London. I would have loved to have London.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I thought there was 1 year crossover. I guess not.
Huh. Well, yeah, I mean, just those guys, though, in their mid-30s that still got it. It's so impressive to me because – shoot, I'm 37, and it's like, you're 2 years younger than me out there just getting 2 sacks, man. Good for you.
Well, he probably doesn't have as many hot dogs and nachos as you.
Well, I don't eat nachos, but otherwise you're on point. You're on to something, Jay. Buffalo wings, nachos, cookies, brownies. You got something. Maybe, yeah. I think
maybe
you're right.
You take those out, you could play middle linebacker for the Commanders.
It's probably all it was, honestly, all this time.
It's better a diet.
It was just one too many hot dogs.
Arm length, speed, toughness, talent.
Probably comparable some of these ways.
All you're missing is a few ingredients. Yeah.
Very very comparable bodies, me and Bobby. How about Daniel Jones through 3 games? Colts are 41-20 winners over the Titans yesterday, and the game wasn't that close. At one point, it was like 34-10 or something. But Indianapolis is 3-0, and Jones, I mean, I'm not throwing him into the MVP combo, but he's had as good a start as anybody at quarterback.
Yeah, for sure. He is in the MVP convo after 3 games, for sure. I mean, what the hell else you got to do? He's been very impressive, and yeah, I think he's got a good team around him. He's got a great running game, very good offensive lineman, and their defense is very opportunistic, and they give him good field position. So they're playing very good. Just got to be careful. I remember last year, was it the year before, when New Orleans started out 3-0, and they were talking, they didn't punt for 3 games, and oh my God, the Saints are the best. They went 4-13 and fired their offensive coordinator. So there's a lot of ball left, but Daniel has been impressive.
Jay, the Eagles have won 19 of their last 20 games. The game they lost took a Devontae Smith drop on a catch that he would make 100 out of 100 times, and Jalen Hurts leaving in that game. It was against Washington. It was pretty miraculous how it happened. But again, 19 of 20 games, they found a way yesterday as well. What can you say about it?
Yeah, they're all around the best team in football right now. It's obviously, I mean, they can hurt you so many different ways. That's their issue. They have two of the best receivers. They don't even have to throw it to them. They can hand it to Saquon, who's the best running back. And Hurts is playing as good a quarterback as there is in the National Football League. Say what you want, but he's a very talented, very good game manager. And when he has to throw, he's productive. When he doesn't have to throw, they're productive. They play good defense. They get two monster D tackles and a good secondary and a good defensive coordinator. So, yeah, I don't know. They don't have any weaknesses. You can't go play the Eagles and say, hey, we can do this and beat the Eagles. I mean, hell, you got to do a lot of good things to beat the Eagles. You got to not turn the ball over. You got to be good with the penalties, and you got to play good, efficient football. Otherwise, you have no chance.
How about the Seahawks?
And the Rams did that yesterday.
Yeah, and they still lost.
The Rams did that. Yeah. They just had some field goals blocked or kick blocked, and they were right there.
How about the Seahawks with Sam Darnold? He was efficient, 14 of 18, 218, two touchdowns. They scored on special teams on a 95-yard punt return as well. Even when they don't run the ball, which early this year has been a struggle for Seattle, play really good defense. They're 2-1 in the West.
Yeah, they're very good. I like their coach, and I think Sam's a very good quarterback. They got some weapons. Defensively, they're exciting. They have a very young, exciting, good, fast defense, and they're fun to watch. And offensively, Sam can put it where he needs to. Njigba is really a good player. Cooper Kupp's still doing his thing a little bit, and this Torrey Horton guy is a good player, so they're a fun team to watch.
Green Bay lost yesterday, and I was, you know, I basically been walking around telling everybody that would listen that they're the best team in the league right now this minute after what I just saw them do on national television to both Detroit and then Washington, and then they lay a stinker against Cleveland, Jay.
Yeah, it was probably one of the most uncharacteristic plays I've seen in the National Football League this year. You got 3rd-and-3, it's 10-0, and Cleveland can't move the ball. I just hand the ball off, but I think Matt LaFleur has so much trust in Jordan Love, he let him throw it and threw it right to the nickel or the linebacker. It was a horrible throw, horrible decision, and it let Cleveland come back and win and then a blocked field goal. Next thing you know, the Browns win, but they had no business winning that game, that's for sure. But you just never know on a week-to-week basis. I still think Green Bay is a very good football team, obviously one of the tops in the NFC, one of the tops in the NFL. You can't make a mistake like that on the road when you have a 10-0 lead late in the fourth quarter.
How about Mac Jones leading the Niners back for a game-winning field goal from Eddie Pinheiro to cap a 63-yard drive at the horn from 35 yards out? Two starts, San Francisco's won both of them. Jones has averaged about 290 passing yards in these two games.
Yeah, Bosa's out for the year. The defense has been playing good. Mac has been impressive. I just can't help that. Is Arizona ever going to overachieve? Are they going to underachieve every stinking year? It drives me nuts. I mean, they never make the plays when they have to win a game, and they always get beat close game. They start out good, and they have a 4-game losing streak, and they'll win a couple, be exciting, they'll end up 7-10, and coach will get fired. It's just they drive me crazy. But, yeah, San Francisco's still pretty good without Joey Bosa, without their starting quarterback, but you know, they're going to have to play a lot better.
That Chargers-Broncos game was great. Justin Herbert has been fantastic just through a few weeks, but what can you say about them?
Yeah, Justin's top of his game right now. They're allowing him to throw the ball a lot more often. He can use his legs. He can scramble within the pocket. Quentin Johnson has probably made the biggest improvement from a couple of years to now. I think he's playing as good as anybody at wide receiver, which I would have never thought that his first call. He dropped more balls than he caught. So, yeah, I think they've been very impressive, and they play great defense, and Harbaugh's got them reeled in, and they got them all believing. So, and they got great leadership on that football team, and they're going to be very, very good. Very tough team to beat because they don't mess up. Justin Herbert's not going to mess up like he did in the playoffs very often. He had those lots of interceptions. That's not going to happen again. And if he protects the ball, they'll play good defense. They'll be in every game.
Last one for you, Jay. The Commanders next play the Falcons, who just got shut out by the Panthers 30-0. Michael Penix has more picks than touchdowns through now 6 career starts. Touchdown and 2 interceptions this year. They haven't had a score from a wide receiver or a tight end, I don't think, this season either. What do you make of how he's playing in that offense?
Brutal. It is a brutal showing. And they went to Kirk late in the fourth quarter, and it's not good. He missed guys wide open. It's bad. So I don't know what they're going to do. They were a quick trigger last year. Not really quick, but they pulled Kirk, then they went to Penix. So I don't know if they're going to have a quick trigger to go back to Kirk again if he has another stinker like that. But That was my, on Kevin Shea's show, that my pick of the week was the Atlanta Falcons, and they lost 30 to nothing. So that wasn't a very good pick. So I couldn't believe what I watched. It was horrible football on both sides of the ball. I mean, it's just, there are some very, very bad football teams out there. I mean, very bad. And Atlanta is one of them, and Carolina is another. And the Houston Texans are one. They can't protect anybody. And oh, God, there's some bad ball going out there right now.
So do you think the Falcons, like, I know that was a dreadful game, but you actually think they're a bad team in terms of Washington's going there this week?
They got shut out by the Panthers. They're the 32nd ranked defense last year, and they got shut out. They have Bijan Robinson. They have Drake London. They have a number 9 pick in the NFL draft.
I guess I'm looking at it. The spread is like 1.5 points right now going to Atlanta. I just think at home they'll play better than that.
Hell no. We're going to load the truck up and bet on the Commanders.
All right, let's go. Let's do that. What about if you and I do it together? I'll put in a dollar.
Now it's a small truck.
Yes. I'll put in a dollar. You put in the rest, and then we'll split the
winnings. Just split it 50-50.
There you have it.
All right, I'll text you.
Toy truck.
I'll text you about some details on that. Thank you, Jay.
You got it.
Appreciate you as always, Jay.
You got it.
Be good, brother.
Thanks for having me. See you.
The coach, Jay Gruden, joining us on Grant and Danny for his weekly appointment on The Fan. He's always great.
The best.
Just love having Jay on.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get a motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, The Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search The Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
That was Jalen Lane's music. 90-yard punt return for a touchdown. Hashtag he a hokey. And he is joining us now on the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. By the way, big show announcement in 1 hour today at 5:25. We're finally ready to make our big show announcement. So make sure you're listening in an hour. But we got business to tend to. Let's talk to Jalen Lane. Jalen, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
We're great, buddy.
We're doing better than that call was of your punt return touchdown. That was a hell of a play. You wouldn't have known it by the call, but it was a really impressive, amazing, high-energy play. You wouldn't have known it based on what Chris Myers did. But what did you think as the ball's coming down? Is it space? I mean, did he outkick his coverage? Like, it seemed like you had some real estate. Take us through it. What were you thinking?
Yeah, man, I knew the call we had. I knew we had a vice on the gunners, so I was like, I wasn't worried about them getting down. I was just seeing what kind of kick it was, what kind of hang, and you know, he's a good punter, so when he kicks it good, he's going to outkick his coverage, and, you know, I felt like I had space, and then if you just look at it, man, I just had to make one guy miss. Everybody else was blocked up. So, you know, sure, I get the credit on the stat sheet, but my punt return team, they put in work for sure.
How soon after you catch that ball and you're matriculating up the field as you're talking about, how soon after that do you know, dude, I'm going to score? Like, what at what point in the run are you like, this is a touchdown? Like, when did you know?
It was right after I kind of got through that first little hole, and then I saw it was open field, and then the punter, I was like, oh, this is six. So I just made sure I just yes. outrun it. I was like, I got to hit the Jets. If I get caught, now I'm not going to hear the end of it from anybody. So
what about the punter, though? What was your level of confidence? Because
he made a good effort, honestly.
It was closer than I thought to him actually tackling you when I went back and watched it. How sure were you that he was not going to prevent you from your first touchdown?
I mean, you know, I'm very confident in my abilities. And, like, no offense to any punter anywhere. I love Tressway. But, you know, we get paid to make people miss. And, you know, that's the last. One of the last people you want to let tackle you, especially on a big play like that. So you got to make it happen.
I'm just texting Tress real quick. You said punters are not really football players.
You can't see me.
That's what I preface. Yeah. I said I love Tress.
What is the – you said a vice on the gunners. Like, what is that technique? What does that mean? You're just running them?
We got the gunners doubled up. You know, gotcha. We don't call it every play. It's just – it was one of those instances – you know, we're trying to get a good return, get those kind of just take the gunners out of the equation, essentially.
So the opposite of that, I would imagine, then is like isolation, man, like one on one with a gunner, and then you have more guys to try to block the punt.
Yeah, pretty much. We got a bunch of different schemes, but just in that situation, even one on one in my other returns. Noah and Ham, them boys, they did a great job one-on-one too. So, you know, shout out to them.
Jalen Lane with us. Sorry, buddy. Jalen Lane with us here on Grant and Danny. It seems to be you guys on teams are really taking advantage in terms of returns. Obviously, your ability is evident. It's obvious how quick you are in the burst, getting upfield, et cetera. But both in terms of coverage and of returns, it feels like you guys are a little bit ahead of your opponents right now in terms of that. A, is that the feeling that you have? And B, where does that come from?
I think it just comes from just our standards that we set from ourselves way back in OTAs. You know, the first meeting that I ever had with Coach Izzo was yelling fast and physical. That's what we're going to be. We're going to be a violent unit on all phases of the game. And, yeah, even back from week one to Green Bay and to now, you see big returns, you see big plays on punt and kickoff, things like that. And, you know, that's just kind of the standard we have for our team. And we know if we win that phase of the game, that's going to help us, you know, get the win ultimately.
So I'm going somewhere with this, but I want to make this open-ended, and then I'll come back to kind of my point. What is your philosophy as a punt returner when you're returning a punt?
One, get the ball back for the offense. That's the number one goal when I'm back there. You know, whatever happens, if a bad kick, whatever, as long as we get the ball back, my job is successful. But, you know, the cherry on top is, you know, getting a first down or any 10-plus, that's cherry on top. And then the cake is, you know, housing it and, you know, making a big play like that. So that's kind of like my mindset when I'm going back.
Well, the reason I ask is because, to me, a great punt returner, and it's easier said than done because there's always different things going on in front of you, but it's the up-the-field, no-wasted movement, no, like, jab step, sideways stuff. I don't remember a punt returner here in a long time who catches the ball and immediately runs forward, and you seem to do that every single time. There's almost never lateral steps or sideways movement. I mean, is that just kind of the design and how it's worked out, or is that like a paradigm thing for you that's your philosophy?
I mean, yeah, I've always kind of had that philosophy. You know, I don't want to do too much side-to-side movement because in this league, man, everybody's fast, everybody's athletic. You go east and west, and they're going to end up making a play. So just try to put pressure on them. But also, it's kind of just the faith I have in the unit. Like, them boys, like I got to give them all the credit because, you know, they're the ones, you know, rushing the line and blocking them and holding up the gunners so I can have the confidence back there to know I got space and know that, you know, I can get vertical.
So I've got another logistical kind of return question, and I'm going somewhere with this. Jalen, did you play hoops at all growing up?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I didn't play my senior year, but I played from a kid all the way through high school, pretty much.
Were you good?
I was pretty good. I mean,
what was your career high in points? Challenged. Let's guess what his career high in points in a game was.
He had a 38-point game once. That's Jalen Lane.
I'm going to say he scored 29 in a game.
Oh, that was both close. It was actually my best game. I remember this so vividly. Eighth grade, I hit like 4 threes. I ended up having like 33 points.
Ooh, right, Danny there. Was on it.
Yeah, it was pretty close.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's why I asked. There was one return where it looked like your blocker was on to your left. Okay, so he's on the defender's right side. And it looked like, so that's the side he's on. And it's almost like one of those screens where the defender's leaning so hard that you turn down the screen and went by him to the right. How much of that is instinct, I'm quicker, this guy's leaning, or how much of that is this is where the play or the return is designed to go?
I think that was mostly just kind of instinct. Mm-hmm. And like that punt, it was a little shorter and didn't have much hang, so I had to run up and get it. And my momentum was kind of taking me there. And, you know, I didn't think it was a flag on Noah on that play. But, you know, you can't control the refs. But honestly, looking at the film, if I go inside of Noah, then I'm sure they don't throw that flag. And, you know, we get a 25-yard return right there. But, you know, there's stuff to learn from.
Jalen Lane, first punt return touchdown for the Commanders since 2016. If you're looking for a 90-plus yarder, you got to go way back before that. How old were you in 2016?
2016. Hey, what grade was I in? How old am I now? I was around 13, 14, something like that.
Okay, oh, my God. You're in middle school the last time somebody returned a punt for a touchdown for the Commanders. Hey, when did this start? This is kind of a philosophy thing, too. So I'm old enough to remember you put your heels on the 10-yard line, and if the ball goes over your head, you're not allowed to go back in there to field it. And now there are dudes fielding the ball at the 4, at the 3, college, NFL, and it doesn't seem like coaches are upset. Like, I know punters have gotten better, and maybe that's part of it, but what are the new rules now, and when did it change?
Well, it's still definitely – for us, we do heels on the 8 and don't back up, but it's just certain situations. You know, if – they're like obviously like on the 40 or 50 yard line and they're in like a poop situation, then you're probably not going to get a return because they're going to be down there pretty quick. But in that situation, they were, I don't know what yard line they were on, but he just got a good kick. And, you know, if you got space, you know, you feel like you can get past the 20, you know, you might as well help with field position.
But I'm sure you see this, like, watching the NFL every weekend, there's dudes that are, like, backpedaling to the 4 and catching balls. Or I saw one yesterday where a guy, like, was back to the punter, like, tracking it like a center fielder running toward the fence. And he fields a ball at the 2 and it, like, carries him into the end zone. You're like, what in the hell are you thinking? Like, whatever happened to heels on this yard line and don't go backwards? Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I just think, you know, field position just plays a big part in today's game. And, you know, you got confident guys back there who feel like, you know, they can make a play no matter where they're at. And I just feel like that's kind of – I see what you're saying. I feel like it's been a trend definitely over the past couple of years.
Jalen, how comfortable do you feel as a receiver in this league just yet? And where do you think, you know, your journey is going to take you in that regard?
Yeah, I definitely feel comfortable. I'm definitely just I'm just trying to grow each and every day. You know, I feel like I'm in a great room with Terry, Devo, Noah, Chris Moore, guys who've been in the league for a really long time and been doing it at a high level. So, you know, I'm just, like I said, every day I'm just trying to grow. Just take coaching points. And Coach Ingram, he's been doing a great job as well, just, you know, helping all the young guys.
You had a chance yesterday, your first touchdown catch, kind of a back shoulder ball, looked like maybe could have made a play on it, would have been tough. But take us through that play. What'd you see?
Yeah, it was a double candidate. We tried to get them off sides, and they did jump, but I don't think they crossed the neutral zone. But, you know,
should have been called, by the way. Great,
yeah. You know, Marcus, he gave me a great ball, and, you know, at the end of the day, I got to come down with it. And, you know, we talked about it in film earlier today, but, you know, that's stuff that I'm, you know, my mindset, like the rest of the game, I'm trying to, like, make up for that. You know, I flush it, in the moment because you don't want that to mess you up. I'm like, man, I got to make up. And it happened to be on punt return that I got the – I made up for it. But, you know, that's just kind of my mindset going into it. And, you know, next time I'm going to make that play. And that's how I'm just approaching that.
Well, the day was a net win. You more than made up for it with a 90-yard punt return.
Yeah, what a moment.
Jalen Lane of the Commanders, kind enough to give us a few minutes on Grant and Danny. Hey, before we let you go, any truth to the rumor? So the guy that answered the call when you called in, Toby Altizer, we call him Hokie Altizer. He works on the Virginia Tech Network. He's been singing in your praises since they drafted you and screaming about you. So is there any chance to the rumor that Hokie Altizer actually was involved in some way behind the scenes in the big touchdown that took place yesterday? And does he get any credit for what happened?
I'm not going to lie. I have no clue. If you've been out there, you know, speaking it into existence, I appreciate you.
There you go.
Keep doing it.
That's Hokie's music.
That is Hokie's music.
I mean, Hokie was saying every week that this was the week you were about to rip a punt return touchdown, and it took week three, and Hokie was – you should have seen him today walking around like Vince
McMahon.
Like
he did it. You know what I mean?
He walked in with his Jalen Lane jersey on telling everyone, what did I tell you? He was doing celebration dances in the end zone.
Yeah, tell him to speak that to existence this week too.
We'll tell him to keep chirping. Jalen, thank you. We appreciate you.
Way to go, buddy. Congrats.
Thank y'all.
All right, there you go. We're gonna put him on hold so Hokie can tell him just how good at football he is.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get a motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Adam Schefter, about an hour ago, tweeting that Terry McLaurin is uncertain to play Sunday against the Falcons due to a quad injury. He is seeking more information about the injury. Ben Standig locally, Substack Standig, said that McLaurin is in the process of getting a second opinion on the quad. So, you know, you get your imaging done. Those doctors who do that, whoever those doctors are, tell you what they think. Then the team doctors weigh in. So there's theoretically probably like two opinions out of the chute. And then you eventually get, you know, one more opinion in this case if you're Terry McLaurin before you decide what you're going to do. So his status, very much up in the air. He is progressing. I mean, if you look at his production each week so far this season, it has gone up. Week one, Terry McLaurin finished with 27 yards. Week two, he finished with 48 yards. And then in this past week three game with Mariota throwing the football, he went for 74. Now, it's got to be noted that almost 60 of those came on one play.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't make that play, it's 2 for 15 or whatever it was. I think 18 yards on two catches. But he didn't play at all after the big catch to set up a touchdown. So there could have been another quarter of productivity there for him as well in the fourth quarter. But he was getting more involved, seemed to be coming into form. So this could be, you know, a big deal if you don't have him against the Falcons. It would mean a lot more. Luke McCaffrey, who made three catches, caught his first touchdown at the end of the game this past Sunday. It would mean you really need Noah Brown back on the field, who's also hurt. Like, what if you don't have McLaurin or Noah Brown? And now your wide receiver room, if Debo's doing the Debo thing, is basically Chris Moore on one side and Luke McCaffrey on the other, with Jalen Lane playing a bunch. No disrespect to those guys, but very quickly,
it's not exciting.
That is not an NFL caliber high end receiver room that can elevate your backup quarterback, Marcus Mariota.
It's not scaring any defensive coordinator either. I mean, any look is going to get schemed up. I mean, you see McCaffrey's, you know, walk in touchdown. That's an example of when that can happen.
Now, if that group from Marcus Mariota with a couple of new guards and, you know, without John Bates, your blocking tight end, if he doesn't play, we don't know any of the statuses yet. But if that all happens in Atlanta, and they go out and they score 36 points in a big win, then Cliff Kingsbury can just put his feet up on a desk and, you know, have a nice champagne, and everyone can talk about how awesome he is for a week.
He should be walking on rose petals like the Prince of Zamunda, pretty much. You know what I mean? Just at his feet.
Like, nothing matters. You're just scheming it up. Like, give me 11 guys, I'll make music.
Yeah, give me 11 guys and a football.
Give me a tuber, I'll make music.
Like, to get some money out of it, Mr. Costello. Yeah, I mean, this is going to hurt. I mean, if you're Terry McLaurin, you're not going for a second opinion because everything's okay. You know what I mean? At a minimum, he's not going to be himself this week. And here's the thing. No one's going to know. No one has any idea if him not playing or holding out or in or whatever for an extended period of time and starting late is the reason he got hurt, or if it's a football play he got hurt. No one will be able to tell. That will be a mystery forever and ever. Even people that were there, and even McLaurin probably couldn't tell you if it was the football play that did it, or a soft tissue injury that was going to happen inevitably, or because he didn't have the ramp-up time. No one will know, and no one has any idea. But the point is, here we are. They are razor-thin all of a sudden at several spots. In the secondary, as we talked about, you mentioned Bates previously, now with McLaurin and Noah Brown already done. This is kind of the scary scenario. It's not all about age, obviously, but there is a correlation when you are the oldest team in football. Older players get injured more. Now, Bobby Wagner is a machine, so sometimes you buck the trend. But the point is, when this happens, this is one of the things that for those of us who are kind of going, hey, have you noticed that the way they're building? And I understand why they're doing it this way, because the cabinet was bare and they're kind of being good right now because they've got a quarterback that's really, really good. So I get that they're doing this, but here's the risk. Well, now it's happening. This is what the risk is.
Two things are true here. They are one of the oldest teams in the league, and that does increase your chance of injuries. But also, most of the injuries they're sustaining, a lot of them are not to older players.
Totally either. Fair, yeah.
Like, Trey Amos got hurt. He's a rookie. Percy Butler got hurt.
Bates is a young guy.
He's not a kid. John Bates has just got his second contract, is in the prime of his career. I wouldn't even consider Terry McLaurin an age risk from an injury standpoint. We're talking about basically a 30-year-old. It's not like Zach Ertz, Bobby Wagner, you know, to the point we were making in the preseason.
Right, but for Wise, Eckler, Jones.
Yeah, there's some of that for sure. I just mean others. Specific to like this week's problems.
Sure.
All the injuries they had against, you know, in the most recent game against the Raiders, and like now the secondary being in peril. Will Harris is, you know, bone breaking is not because he's old. But right. Yeah, I think both things are true. That was kind of how I started it. Like, they're going to have some old guys get hurt because they're old. Also, this is the correction, I think, from having such a healthy year last year. Something we talked a lot about, by the way.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen year over year. You just don't get that lucky. Some teams get snake bitten, where every single year you get pillaged by injuries. Jay Gruden had that problem on the offensive line for years. The 49ers are a great example of this. Mm-hmm. You saw Nick Bosa, we saw it yesterday, torn ACL out for the year. I mean, they are dropping like flies, all their best players. Still no Ayuk, and now no Brock Purdy, and they had McCaffrey on injury reports the last couple of weeks, and Nick Bosa's out, and you can go round and around. There's teams that just every year have those problems, but what you rarely see is a team that year after year forever just doesn't ever have injuries. And last year they got so lucky, it's been the opposite so far this season.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. And I don't know how well prepared they are for it. Again, I go back to the preseason. It's not apples to apples. It's not one-to-one. But their backups, playing other backups, got shellacked, got knocked around.
Do you feel any better about receiver based on how Luke played this week?
No.
Because he did come out in the fourth quarter. Then the 43-yard catch and run touchdown was mostly like scheme, and he was wide open, and he just ran into the end zone. But he caught two other balls outside of that. I mean, I would feel a little bit worse had that game not have happened for Luke, and the last thing we've seen is the preseason, basically. But at least you feel like he's starting to come on with some of the athletic traits, and maybe the game's slowing down a little bit. Now, you still have to move on without Terry McLaurin.
Right.
I guess where I would have anxiety is just the number of guys that might miss. We got a long time between now and Sunday. Nobody knows about most of these dudes. I don't think Jaden Daniels is going to go based on how Mariota played this weekend and the fact that you'd be really pushing it to get him back anyway, but perhaps he will. But in a world where you don't have Daniels, where you have possibly no McLaurin or Brown and no Bates and no Eckler and two guards that are making their second start of the year, I mean, that's over half of your offense.
Just like that. Yeah, I mean, to me, receiver's the spot because Noah Brown is hurt. Noah Brown is going to be hurt. That when he comes back, we'll have a limited window of Noah Brown play, and then Noah Brown, again, not to be flippant about it, but has an injury track record. One of the reasons he was available to you. When he's played, he's done well. For McLaurin, not being in there, that all of a sudden, as you said, to start this thing, really lowers the caliber of the room, right? If Luke McCaffrey is able to escape in a busted coverage and go for 43, outside of that, it was 2 for 13. You know, I'm not necessarily writing home saying I've now seen the next great gadget player, the next great wideout here in Washington. Credit to him for those two catches, but, you know, nothing special there. Jalen Lane, great punt returner. To me, not ready to be a real contributor via the receiving game. Again, he could do some stuff around the line of scrimmage, a couple gadget things. You sort of turn into a punt return. You flip it to him, going sideways, a pop pass, something here and there. But not there as a route runner in my mind. So it's Chris Moore. It's Luke McCaffrey. It's a lot of Ertz, probably. And, you know, whoever comes out of the backfield, maybe it's McNichols.
I'm a lot higher on Lane, just out there at practice every day, watching him route guys up. But he did it throughout the summer. He hasn't yet on, like, you're talking about three or four throws that haven't gone very well so far.
Sure.
And that's true.
And that's all I've got,
like,
yeah.
But sometimes that's a tell. Like, Deami Brown's on can't get right, three or four passes into his career, and you're going, I don't really know about this guy. And 3 years later, he's still on team can't get right. Sometimes, though, like, you redo that play right afterwards, and he might make the catch or box the guy out a little better. So if you told me right now Jalen Lane went, like, 5 catches for 71 yards this week, that would not shock me at all if he got an opportunity and made plays. Having watched the practices and how good he was, like, I'm hopeful and confident that he could actually help them.
Well, now's the time. I mean, if it's going to happen, this would be a great opportunity for that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if there's no McLaurin and if there's no Noah Brown, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Should Marcus Mariota's outing against the Raiders, going as well as it did, affect the decision-making against the Falcons? Something you and I disagree on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm actually really interested to see what people think about this and to touch the folks on the phones at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067. So, Danny, I'm going to tee you up first here, and then I'll give my take. But you're adamantly against the idea that how Mariota plays is a factor at all.
Correct. When is Jaden Daniels okay to play? That's the question. That's the only answer. That's the only thing I care about. The implication, how the backup plays matters, is are you willing to play Jaden Daniels before he's healthy and ready to play? If the answer is no, then there's no other variable. The only variable here is Jaden Daniels' health, ability, can he be himself? If that's all you care about, then you don't care what the backup's doing. I mean, that to me, this is as simple and open and shut situation as I don't care if Mariota went 0 for 21 and they lost the game and it was terrible. Is Jaden Daniels healthy? The answer is no, he doesn't play. The only reason you would care, to me, how the backup does is if you need to rush him back or if there's something where he goes, well, he's only 75%, but damn it, the backup stinks. So if I can get him to 78, I'll have him go. I don't think that's a consideration for anybody. The only way that it should matter what Mariota's doing is if you're willing to put Jaden Daniels on the field before people like me are comfortable with him being on the field.
So for me, that there is a difference between like rushing a guy and letting him play before you should, or shutting him down and not letting him play when he's ready, or some of the things you're referencing, mm-hmm. and just the urgency with which you operate to get him back. And I think it's pretty simple. When I see Marcus Mariota operate at a high level, when I see Marcus Mariota play the way he did, I don't have to be as aggressive in getting Daniels back on the field. I don't have to be as urgent. I can be a little bit more methodical. Now, what you're saying might be the utopian process. It's just not the reality of it in terms of Well, when he's ready, he plays. And if he's not 100%, then he doesn't. Correct. Except that there's a gray area in professional athletics where there's it's not a Madden game where you can actually look at a guy's percentage.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Of course I do, yeah.
So there's no such thing really as knowing. Is he 100%? Is he 95%? Is he 90%? Mariota with the Achilles all offseason and preseason, whatever that was, you know, he probably wasn't 100% this weekend. What was he? I don't know. Would his Madden score on his percentage underneath of him, like a video game character of life, would he have been at 87% in that game? Would he have been at 96%? I'm not really sure. We just heard that Bill had a dinged up knee and that Kroski Merritt may not be able to practice again tomorrow, and he didn't practice today, and his status is now in question. Okay, so what was his percentage at the end of the game? He wasn't missing carries. He wasn't not out on the field, but maybe he was running at like 63%. And my point is, while what you're saying is true, as just a, I always call it a straw man, I don't know how to say it otherwise, but like a platitude of when he's ready, play him, and if he's not ready, don't play him. Thank you. I agree with that. I'm not joning on you, but like that is the point people make. Like, when Jaden Daniels can play, he plays. Yep. When he shouldn't play, he shouldn't. Okay, cool. But now, dealing with what is, how aggressively do we push him? How urgently are we operating? Do we let him back on the practice field as soon as he says he's ready to? Do we hold him out the extra day when doctors are saying, you know, it's a pain threshold thing? What if that's the case with the knee, where we don't think he's risking injury? It's really about swelling. When the swelling goes all the way down based on this injury, he's not at risk of doing something again. It's more of a pain threshold tolerance thing. Now it's just about him grinning and bearing it. And how much do you want to put him through in that regard? He could play at, you know, 85% or whatever that looks like, or you could just have Mariota play. So I do think it's a big deal that Mariota played well, that the offense operates when he's in there, and that you have a chance to go win a football game. And you can buy Daniels an extra week. What a wonderful thing.
Sure. It when it works out, it's great. But if Mariota had stunk, what are we really suggesting? And that's what I keep coming back to.
So if he stunk, we're suggesting that you have to be more urgent and aggressive, not in putting him on the field too early, mm-hmm. but in maybe listening to his wants, his demands. You're still operating with the doctors, but there's going to be multiple opinions in all directions. You could listen to the more get him on the field friendly ones. You know, again, I think where we both have to be for the conversation is they're never going to put him in harm's way when they shouldn't. And they're never going to just have him sitting for weeks watching Marcus Mariota when he's ready to play as if Mariota is now their starter.
Are baselines, yeah.
So if those are the two baselines, it's just a matter of, I don't have a better word than aggressiveness, urgency.
Mm-hmm.
And how Mariota played, to me, should be a factor.
Right, which I heard you said it very well. I don't get it. Because to me, it is the only variables I'm considering are Daniels, his health, and those numbers. You're 100% right. I use 100% as just a qualifier, as a way to sort of try to illustrate the point of I need him to pass every threshold. I understand no one's 100%. Like, I'm not 100%. Nobody's 100%. But whatever the number is, that's the, I did this with Griffin where he was cleared and he wore a brace and moved around terribly and was re-injured and it was awful.
So say I'm not your doing part that. Again that you just said. Like, the things you care about are?
When Daniels is ready. And it's not a well, he's cleared. Like, I have a higher threshold for it. Please protect the franchise player. I have him for 64 more games, including this one, under contract without the extension kicking in. That's when he's under team control. If I have to sacrifice a week or 2 weeks for his long-term health and viability, that's the baseline. That's what we're doing. So I know we're arguing similar things and past each other at this point. So the only variables to me, like, Mariota could be, he could get the flu this weekend and not play. I'm going, if Daniels isn't ready, he's not ready. That's the only thing that matters to me as to when Daniels plays is Daniels and the milestones.
And that part I agree. Like, to me, when you say that, I say, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is like the next step forward, I guess, which is, of course, I agree with everything you just said. And also, because of how Marcus Mariota has now played three times, mm-hmm. runs this offense, because I know I'm going to get a professional job. To me, it's like I got a great waiter on the floor at this nice steakhouse, and they call me, and they're coming back from a cold, and they're going, I could perfectly fine. I can work tonight. But I got another awesome waiter that will do
right.
just as good a job.
It's got tonight. A charming story about the bottle of wine, too. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like for tonight, we're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you never are back again, I'm going to lose money, and I'm going to be worse off on the floor. But for this night, just make sure.
Yeah.
Like, rest up. Come back better than ever tomorrow night. And if I didn't have that, if we're going to be swimming upstream and drinking through a fire hose, and it's going to be a 7-alarm fire on the floor, because without this guy, we crumble. It's the same thing. I think if your backup quarterback was Sam Hartman in this world,
right?
I apologize, but I'm just going to go here.
Okay.
So this past week, you just lost to the Raiders at home, even though they played like crap.
And you're, 7.5, 8-point dogs this week?
And this point, you're now, probably a 4.5-point underdog in Atlanta with Sam Hartman. Then it's not that I am pushing him along. It is that there's just, it's just what it is. There's more urgency to get him back in this sport where jobs are on the line. And I think you can just turn that completely off. You could just hit a button to say, nope, we don't have to worry about this. That's all. And maybe your point is that should be how it is anyway.
With that guy, it is for me.
I agree with you.
And that's kind of my point.
But it isn't reality, is my point. Like, we can all talk about the utopian part of it. Like, we lived through this to an extent.
Yeah.
But also, the guy is at every minute of every day in your ear, begging and pleading and showing you, watch me run, watch me jump, watch me cut, watch me do this. And he's got doctors holding papers that say, he could do this, it's fine, he could do it. So there's just gray area to this that, like, it's not like a doctor's note that says Danny can't do the radio show today.
Right. I mean, for me, just given my lived experience, and yours too, and everybody that saw this, my gray area, I need it to be way closer to one of the two colors that makes the gray. One side or the other. And my point is that judicious, cautious approach with this critically important player that's respectfully more important than if and when Colson Yankoff is coming back from an injury, or more important than John Bates or anybody else in that building. Like, all I want is the deference toward the superstar at the most important position, regardless of what's happening. The danger folly thinking, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but the dangerous folly thinking is, oh God, we need him back. I saw that happen once, and it was disastrous. It was one of the most calamitous things that happened. And what I'm asking for is the adult in the room. Yeah, when the guy's chirping in your ear, I want to come back. I'm glad you want to come back. We thank you for wanting to come back.
Of course.
We got it.
I think that there's also been a shift in tone in the media, too, locally, where a week ago on Thursday, Friday, he might play on Sunday. And now, he probably shouldn't play against Atlanta. Or barring the team having kind of whispered something, which I don't think is happening because they don't do that, it tells me that a lot of people are allowing how well Mariota and the offense played without him to be a factor in their, what is the rush?
I think that's
here?
Natural, by the way. Because they won, so nobody's worried about it. If they're 1-2 and he played poorly, people would be going, oh my God, when's he coming back?
Of course.
Yeah.
But my point is, you're acting like the team is different. And while that would be utopian and wonderful, they're different to an extent. They have more information than everybody else. I think that what Mariota did, how the offense operated, how you feel about the offense without him is way better than a week ago. And of course it should factor into the aggressiveness with which you bring this guy back, in my opinion. There's been a little cold water poured on this weekend's game for this reason. The big news of the day, Jaden Daniels already ruled out. Terry McLaurin will not play either, has been ruled out. Wide receiver Noah Brown is not going to be on the field on Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons, nor will your top blocking tight end, John Bates. So just a casual, no starting quarterback, neither of two of your top three wide receivers helping you, or your best blocking tight end, but go get the Falcons. And it won't surprise a whole lot of people to know that Washington's gone from a 2.5-point favorite initially, and on the look-ahead line, I think it was even a little better than
3.5,
that.
3.5, yeah.
To now 2.5-point dogs in some of the books that I'm seeing right now. So a 5-point swing, much larger than last week when Daniels didn't play, just based on all of the guys they're going to be without as they hit the road.
Yeah, just seeing now from John Keim, I guess via Adam Schefter, that A.J. Terrell for Atlanta won't play, which is nice, but, you know, again, it doesn't...
Who's running routes against their number two corner?
What I was about to bring up, right? It's, you know, can Chris Moore take advantage? They'll find out at 1 on Sunday.
By the way, he didn't play. A.J. Terrell did not play last weekend against Carolina either. Now, their problem was not necessarily their defense, although they didn't have a banner game. They didn't score a single point. And numbers approximate, I'm not sure that there's ever been any teams that have won a game when they didn't score a single point. But that's two straight where your best corner's out.
So you would normally go into that game and go, oh, maybe there's an error in the
somebody's
back end of the
feast.
Secondary. Yeah. But it's no McLaurin. It's no Noah Brown. I like Debo on some middle of the field, deep over, dig stuff. But it's got to be Chris Moore, Luke McCaffrey, Jalen Lane. The bottom of the wide receiver depth chart's got to step up here.
Yeah, they've already majored in Debo. This is now your double majoring in Debo, in my view. I mean, this is Debo early, Debo middle, Debo late. You just hope he's, you know, gets through it unscathed. But yeah, I'm featuring him a ton on some of that short stuff. See if he can run after the catch, break a tackle, do that kind of patented Debo thing that you saw so many times in San Francisco, turn a 7-yard hitch into a 50-yard gain. Something like that I think is going to be essential to win this game on the road. And you said it. The consensus now has gone from Washington, if it has enough of its horses, is the better football team. They're now road underdogs in this game. The consensus has kind of swung towards Atlanta.
I want to bring Toby on for a moment before we dive deeper into the actual football operation, because Toby is the one of the three of us who just consumed his lunch out here.
Yep.
You and I will be doing that in the upcoming commercial
break. In a matter of moments.
But I saw Toby's food got here right as we were starting, and I noticed now that Toby's food is gone.
Yes.
And so it seems like it was a success. What did you consume?
Pan-seared rockfish.
And?
Spectacular. The sear was great, so you had a nice crunch with the skin.
Okay.
Light and flaky fish. So, so good.
This is an elegant situation today for us.
Very much so. I mean, Grant, of course, went with the childish burger, but
yes.
Everything else, Danny and I are going to indulge in more adult fare.
Elevated palate.
Very, very good.
Of course, yeah.
Very, very good.
They told me that they have an exquisite burger. I came to a sports bar that is elevated, to be clear. It's actually a power lunch bar, I would say.
Elevated.
This is where I would like bring clients to have meetings and
yeah, of course.
Whatnot. But, I'm gonna dabble with the burger.
I would do that bit. You're exactly right. We're talking about clients. I would do the bit where I'd go, you know where we could meet? Great place. I know a little spot. It's called the Char Bar.
Yeah, you want to
easy to come by.
Talk about Clark's paperwork? Bring it over there in a folder.
Did you see the Tompkins file? Just stuff like that.
But you have to – there's like paper clips on your papers.
Oh, there'd be so many paper clips.
And manila folders.
I don't like staples. I like the feel of being able to take the paper clip off if I need to.
Someone's going to have a meeting here today where they open up their suit jacket and they pull the papers out of the inside pocket. You know, you're not just carrying them in.
Right.
Like,
right.
Out of the pocket, perfectly folded. Mm-hmm. Tobes, you've got your American flag hat and your U.S. 2020 Ryder Cup gear on. Not off to a good start for the Americans, by the way.
No, I woke up this morning, and they were already through their front nines, and it was a pretty embarrassing performance by the Americans early on. But hopefully the afternoon wave is going a little bit better. I see a little red on the scoreboard, so it looks like
enough,
it's going
Tubbs.
A little bit better, but it couldn't go much worse this morning for the Americans.
Well, you can keep us abreast on all things Ryder Cup as we go today. But, yeah, we're going to major in the Commanders and in the NFL. Here's where I want to start on G&D. On this Football Friday, on a field trip Friday out here at Char Bar and Reston at the JW Marriott. We'll be seeing you as you come out today to hang out with us. Plenty of room, parking all around us, different garages in this little neighborhood here. Do you have any surprise that they ruled Daniels out today? Because I actually think that they could have listed him, limited again, and said he was a game-time decision, and nobody would have batted an eye. They would have even kept the suspense, the momentum, because he did such a good job when he spoke, making it seem like he's perfectly fine. Now, we've seen the video, and he's not quite 100%, I would speculate, but he wants to play. And there's no doubt in my mind, after seeing his press conference this week, Danny, seeing how adamant he is that the knee doesn't bother him, he's not compromised, he can be himself, he thinks he can go out and play winning football, I promise you he was advocating behind the scenes to play in this game, and they basically had to protect him from himself. Last week, a lot of people thought that happened. I don't know that it did. I think he was told earlier in the week on this plan, it was very likely that they weren't going to play him. This week, it does seem like he was elevating in his not only willingness, but climbing in what he was able to do in practice, and they eventually had to say it's not happening. But I'm a little bit surprised they didn't take this thing into the weekend just to keep the mystery going as to whether or not he was going to play.
Yeah, I am too. It, you know, would have been an extra day or two, as you said, of that mystery, just making Atlanta just prepare just in case, right? It kind of tells you a couple things. Maybe to me, my inference, and whether this is fair or not, this is the first thing I thought of, maybe he wasn't that close to playing. You know what I mean? Like,
If you're ruled out on Friday instead of a game-time decision, Danny, it's obviously not a let's see how he feels over the weekend.
Right. Yeah, my thought was going into this, and tell me if you think this is crazy pants. If this was a playoff game, he was going to play this week. You know what I mean? Like, if this is a win or go home, you got no choice, you know, the only shot you get here, week 17 kind of thing, or a playoff game, divisional round, whatever, he would have played. But because it's not, and because they're smart and being judicious and careful and thoughtful, they were going to rule him out eventually. That was kind of how I was thinking this would go. By doing it Friday, it kind of told me maybe he wasn't that close being able to get on the field and play based on whatever metrics they were using. I mean, I don't know if that's irresponsible. That's the first thing I thought of, though.
Well, it certainly wasn't as close as it sounded like in his press conference. There's no doubt. I think he has improved substantially because he was able to take part in three practices. If you're just comparing it to a week ago,
yep.
We're on a trajectory now where it would be somewhat surprising if he didn't play against the Chargers. And in fact, I'd be willing to go as far as to say, if he doesn't play next weekend in L.A., now we know that this thing was more serious initially than was let on, number one. Because you're talking about almost a month recovery before he'd be back on the field after missing three games at that point. But you would also know at that juncture that it was never really day-to-day. It was actually week-to-week. Because day-to-day over 3 weeks missing games is not congruent. I mean, those two things can't both be true. But I guess for most people that doesn't matter too much, the semantics of how they're handling it or what they're saying. I just think they saw Marcus Mariota play this past weekend. And for the third time in three chances on the field for this organization, he was exceptional. He played a very, very clean game. He was decisive and accurate as a passer. He was explosive and dynamic as a rusher. Ran for 40 yards in the first half. Throws for a couple hundred yards in the game. And coming out of that performance, their best offensive game of the season, through three games, you've got a top six offense in the NFL. Do you realize right now, this moment, they're the number one rushing offense in the NFL at 5.7 yards per carry and 157 yards per game? And I think when they look around and they go, wait, no McLaurin, no Noah Brown, no John Bates, we're going to have to get some rushing from our quarterback. This is going to have to be some read option, some pistol, some design QB run stuff. If you're not completely convinced in Jaden Daniels being able to do that at his normal level, you know Mariota runs it really well. I mean, in terms of just straight read option, he's as good as there is in the league, in my opinion. So if you're going to have to bake that in because Ja'Cory Krosky merits not 100% and because your receiving room is pillaged by health at this point, then why wouldn't you want your more healthy quarterback available to give you some of that playbook? I think he opens things up for Kingsbury right now in a way that a compromised Daniels doesn't.
I think you're exactly right about that. And to me, you know, just sort of looking at some of the numbers and things that I've found, Atlanta plays more man than your average bear, which tells me that's a great opportunity for Daniels to have some impact on the ground. That'd be amazing if Daniels could impact on the ground without having actually played. I meant Mariota. That tells you that there'll be that time, whether it's via scramble or you catch them in a certain RPO look or a read option look that they're not anticipating, with everybody's got their head turned, and maybe you could have another one of those carries like you saw this past week against the Raiders. We ended up fumbling, but I think you could have a couple of those dagger-type runs on some third downs to keep the chains moving. I think this is going to be a little bit more of a slog than this past week was. And I know I said that about the Raiders, and they won going away, and the offense was really, really good. So, you know, a little bit sort of calling for rain on a sunny day,
well,
but
Obama
it does feel
style,
like that.
Let me be clear. I think you've predicted all slogs to this point. The first game you had like a 17-16 rock fight. So that's kind of where you're viewing this offense. But this one makes a lot of sense.
This, I know, I've been wrong.
They're literally on their B offense.
Yeah, Giants game was a slog. Green Bay was. But this one, you know, the Raiders game I was wrong about. They thumped a team that had come in good against the run. This Atlanta team, I think you can run on them. I mean, they're middle of the pack in terms of yards per carry and allowed and things like that. But, it feels to me like the best rushing offense in the league, whom you just referenced, three-headed monster, whoever ends up toting the rock. But I think there are going to be some good quarterback run opportunities in this game. And because of the point you made, I think you're 100% right on, you go, well, if that's where our game plan is taking us, we don't want Daniels doing that.
It's funny because I worry more about the defense in this game than I do the offense, despite all the injuries that we're talking about being on offense. And the reason I say that is Atlanta was so terrible when they had the football against the Panthers, scoring 0 points and getting blown out by 30. Michael Penix throwing two egregious interceptions, having just frankly an unacceptably bad performance. He ended up getting benched, which is evidence of that. But all week long, they've been hearing it from the outside. In the building, this is a lock arms kind of grin and bear it week where you got to buckle down and be on your P's and Q's. Your head coach, Raheem Morris, is being asked about how long the leash is for Penix and, you know, his backup, Kirk Cousins, and are they going to make any changes on offense. But when you get shut out,
yep.
It's just
– against that team.
It's a motivator.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
You go back to the drawing board, and I think you try a lot of new things on offense. My guess is their plan, their scheme, their play calling – It's going to be different. They're going off script here.
They're moving Zach Robinson down to the field. You know, you always hear about that. The coordinator that was on the field is now in the booth. The guy that was in the booth is now on the field. But there had to be some introspection and some self-scouting after you got throttled and couldn't manage a loud clap. I mean, they could barely get out of the huddle against Carolina. You would think they'd be on their P's and Q's this week.
I think you could move Zach Robinson onto the field. It wouldn't help him very much.
Put him in a helicopter.
Watch this offensive scheme and tell me he is doing a good job. There's no air yards. There's no play action pass or moving the pocket with the best running offense in football since the beginning of last year. You've got one of the elite running backs in this league in Bijan Robinson, an outside zone, pin and pull stuff, like all the stretch stuff they do outside the tackle box. You'll never see them go play action and boot the other way. It's inexplicable. Now, maybe they add some of those wrinkles this week.
They finally start to do it.
But they haven't done it. They didn't do it with Cousins, and everyone said it was because of his Achilles. All right, maybe. Now you've got Michael Penix. What's the excuse? It's just that this coordinator, for some reason, doesn't really believe in it. It's very stationary. You're at the same spot in the pocket. They don't move you anywhere. I've been completely confounded by how they run their offense. But you say, well, what? Then why are you worried? It's because of the weapons. It's because Drake London, against the banged-up secondary, should be able to make a lot of plays in that 7 to 15-yard range. Now, 70% of his targets are within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, which is unacceptable, but that's where we are. He's going to end up being used like a tight end and be a high-volume guy. They've got to get more out of Mooney down the field. They got to get Ray McLeod some of those choice routes against guys that he can route up. But how do you cover Bijan out of the backfield? I don't think they have an answer for that. And there's enough Atlanta good in terms of personnel. If you're not completely healthy on the back end and Washington isn't, albeit that they didn't rule anybody out yet, but they got some question marks. Sounds like Trey Amos is a lot healthier than we thought he was going to be. That's my bigger concern than the Washington offense, because I think Mariota plays at a level that allows you to kind of just move forward and
do
not have
stuff,
to worry.
Yeah.
And I would have told you Bates is a huge loss, but I saw him run for two bills without him last week. Sinnott blocked his butt off.
Let's jumbo again, by the way. Trent Scott. Yeah.
Trent Scott as a third tackle playing tight end was awesome. So we just saw it. I know that this is going to be a tougher game. I still think they can win it, but I worry more about the Washington defense, oddly.
I smell what you're cooking, despite the fact that group got shut out on the road to Carolina this past week. And I'm not telling you Kyle Pitts isn't a bitter disappointment. I am telling you that it's not because he's unathletic. You know what I mean? Just like the one time it works, like that guy with the football in his hands. You mentioned Robinson, who's got 14 catches
for 164
yards. By
the way, the idea of Kyle Pitts
is intoxicating.
Is the greatest idea that's ever been concocted. This tight end who's twitchy and explosive and theoretically strong enough in the open field to run through tackles. Like, I will never understand how he's not a superstar. Ever. He had 1,000 yards in his rookie year.
Yep.
He's done nothing since.
It is unfathomable to me that somebody can't figure out what to do with that guy. And at a certain point, it's the guy.
He is playing better this year.
Yeah.
While we're beating up on him,
15 for a buck, 35 through three games. You know, five catches, 45 yards per game.
That's an 80-plus catch season. Like,
yeah.
He's making plays.
He's doing some stuff, but it's not what was promised. You know, I mean, the guy that went fourth overall as the ultimate Swiss Army knife weapon, it doesn't look like Brock Bowers. But, yeah, but to the point – for one game, he's very capable against a group that really struggled to cover tight ends just a couple of weeks ago. Tucker Kraft is still open against them. So I'm with you. I know it sounds like we're Chicken Little here talking about a defense again, or talking about an offense again that struggled so mightily last week. They're making some changes. Receiver coach fired. They're moving where the coordinator is, et cetera. I'm just telling you, there's enough weapons where you go, you give this team enough cracks at it, it may not even be schemed up. Bijan Robinson just makes seven guys miss that time. Or Drake London mosses you and muscles up.
I got Bijan numbers I want to get to in this show that I've kind of dove into this week as a pass catcher and why he's such a problem out of the backfield. How is Washington going to defend him? We've got to figure that out, and we could talk about that. But to your point, I would ask people rhetorically as they drive around today, do you believe in the theory of the occasional dead cat bounce where you fire a head coach and then the next week everybody kind of pays closer attention and you play a little better? I think we've all seen that a million times. If you believe in that, that's what I'm talking about with the Atlanta offense, where they got rid of a coach. They're moving the OC out of the booth to the sideline. The Wolves are at the door. Mm-hmm. These are the types of things you do for a coordinator before a guy gets fired in a couple of weeks. So it's now or never time for Atlanta, for Penix, and for this OC. And that's why they get scary with all the talent that they have.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get emotion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.